Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever you may be. This is the power of performance. If your brand were a band, would you leave your audience wanting more? My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the offices of Eloquent Online here in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and joining me, his name is Scott McKenna, joining us live from the West Coast time. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning on the West Coast, indeed. Hey, listen, I'm excited to talk about music and the live performance so many of our businesses put on each and every day. And I want to start by asking you, you moved from Pennsylvania to Arizona. You've been working on a variety of musical projects, and now you're playing with a band called the Verticolors. You guys did your first live show, was it last week?
Yeah, June the 7th, so earlier this month.
June the 7th, and where was it?
I was at the Hard Rock Cafe in downtown Phoenix.
Oh, nice. So tell me how it went.
It went really, really good. We kind of just met the band's made up of four guys from out in this area, and then we all kind of have backgrounds in music, and Steve specifically, the main guy of the band, has a big production background. So we kind of taken all our expertise from what we've learned over the years and what has worked and what hasn't, and just kind of made it into a really exciting project with a new style of music and stuff. So it went really, really well. Got a great response from it. Had had the managers and staff tell us they apologized because they had understaffed because they weren't ready for the amount of people we had, which was great news for us, obviously. So it went really, really good. We had a good time.
You and I were talking about this show before we went live, and when we did our first event for the concerts we did for financial literacy back in Oregon, I remember thinking the morning of that event, we could have given away about 5,000 CDs, and we only had about 1,000 to give away. And I thought, man, we didn't plan this because most people think things aren't going to go great the first time. They want to be careful and hedge their bets. But you told me in the pre-call that you guys practiced for a long, long time before you ever went live, and it sounds like that was a big difference maker in your show.
It was, and I think that's partially kind of what we really learned is we all had, you know, have done music projects in the past, and so many bands, you get together and they immediately say, okay, let's schedule a gig, let's start to rehearse some shows, let's rehearse some songs and then play them at the shows, see how they go, and we'll just get better as it goes, and then eventually we'll record a CD, and eventually we'll have a decent website. And I think the issue with that is bands and brands in general don't stand out with that approach. It's really easy for there's way too many bands who are just decent, and there's not a lot of bands that spend just tons of time rehearsing. I mean, we rehearsed the Verticolors itself was put together about a year ago, and then over the last year, a lot of recording went into it, and a lot of stuff, and meeting with a lot of good people, and we rehearsed for probably four and a half to 5 months just for our very first show, just putting together every detail of figuring out how to make it go smoothly, sound really, really good. So our approach was that even though it was our debut show, we didn't want people to come and be like, oh, these guys have potential. We wanted them to say,
exactly,
wow, these guys are really, really good.
Exactly. When you say that, you've been here. You visited me here in New Braunfels, Texas, probably four or five times. It's not a big city, but it's not a small town.
Right.
And I remember back in, gosh, it's probably been 5 years now, but 4 years now, a Fortune 500 company that you've heard of, Denny's, opened up here in New Braunfels. And like everybody else in New Braunfels, my wife, my son, my father-in-law, and me, we went go over there to eat breakfast on a Saturday morning, and it was absolute chaos. Nobody knew what was going on. They ran out of menus. They didn't have coffee makers working. You had this big, huge company going live for the first time. And all you could hear were people complaining. Why am I waiting so long? Where's my food? All this kind of stuff. And so when we talked about this, In the pre-call, I was very intrigued because I think what a lot of businesses do today is they say, we're going to roll out our brand in the time-tested, you know, marketing 101 way that we do things. And when you look recently, something like the Facebook IPO, hey, we're going to do a little viral marketing. We're going to get out there on all the cable and satellite networks. And I think right now, people would probably say it wasn't the best IPO of all time. Maybe they weren't ready to go live. And it sounds like what you're saying is it's more important to practice and make sure when people hear you for the first time, it's as close to perfect as possible rather than saying, let's do it and see what people think.
Exactly. And you know what's like the perfect example of that is obviously, you know, me being a huge Mac guy and an Apple guy, just a big Apple fan in general and not so much a fan of the other company. What's a huge example to me of that, though, is like a while back when, I mean, obviously Apple is doing some amazing things, so they have so many people that are interested in their things, and people give them a lot of you know, bad rep sometimes because of the fact that they don't tell people about products way before they're announced. They don't do this, and they don't give timelines all the time of when an exact product is going to be out until literally it's ready and to go. And some people complain about that, but then when you look on the other spectrum, there are so many companies, Microsoft being one of them, that tried to jump the gun so many times when they heard that Apple was going to be coming out of the product that did this or whatever it did. They tried to do something themselves and get it out before Apple just so that they could say it was there. And the problem with that is then they run into all these issues because too many companies, like you said, and bands as well, they just want to get out and be known, that they don't realize that just by getting out earlier than the last or the next band or next brand that's coming out, if you come out without a strong opening like statement and product, it's going to hurt you more than it's going to help you.
Exactly. If you think back to a few moments ago when we started the show, the song that I picked for this show was Tom Sawyer. My favorite band, Rush, probably their most iconic song, has that really weird synthesized opening. And, you know, as a songwriter, you can appreciate that if people don't like a song in the first, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 seconds, they're going to change the channel. They're going to not buy it on iTunes. They're just going to move on to the next thing. And the way you get a great opening is with preparation. And I would absolutely agree with you. I've made the joke many times that Vista is Spanish for made me buy a Mac. And that was the last straw for me. Vista was the last Windows operating system that I used in my personal and business every day-to-day kind of operating system. So that's very, very interesting. About, I guess it was last summer, my son told me, I want to play the trumpet. I want to play a brass instrument in the band in fifth grade. And I was thinking, that sounds like a good option for me. I can kind of help you with the treble clef and all the basics of music. How many beats does a quarter note get in 4/4 time and this kind of thing? And when he started band, I remember the whole time I planned this was because I knew when he got into the mathematical part of the year, fractions, I was not going to be able to help him. And I remember when he first brought home, you know, they start fifth grade kind of reviewing fourth grade, but about December, he starts bringing home fractions, you know, a quarter this, half of that, three quarters this, whatever. And as it got more complicated, I was like, man, multiplying fractions, which one do you turn upside down or whatever? And it was really frustrating for me. But I told my wife, I said, don't worry, though. I can still help with music. I can help with band. And when I was helping my son, that's what really got this whole idea going about a training program that would help businesses interact with their audience better, because there are some principles to music, and you just talked about them with your first show at the Hard Rock. I would say there's probably not a single musical act or artist that has ever started with a great live performance. They've always started in an audition or in their bedroom or in the shower or, you know, in the studio. And it sounds like what you're saying is even today, you know, in the midpoint of 2012, preparation continues to be the most important thing.
Yep, and it's just, and we see it more than ever with bands, because obviously part of the 6 months building up to our first show, what we did a lot is just like any company would do, we research stuff. We research successful bands, and there's a lot of times in music, there's the small bands that no one really knows about, and then there's the huge bands, and there's not too much in between. And we think the reason is behind that is the fact that of the preparation and the little details, that there's something that these big bands did, and it's not just record labels, because record labels are really just dying right now, and most of the bands that are becoming successful are doing things themselves. So what we research is just figuring out what did these bands do differently that this other band that we think is very good but no one knows about, what are they not doing? And as you start to look at it, there's just so many things that come down to every little detail of just little things on stage and things that they did that we would have done differently, and things that they did on their website that we would have done differently, and the way that they wrapped a cable around their mic stand we would have done differently. Every little detail. But when you look at touring bands and huge bands that are obviously well known and doing amazingly well now, their live show and their live preparation and their tour rehearsal and the way that they have things set up and the way that things look are a night and day difference between bands that are not doing that. And so exactly. We said to ourselves, you know what, we don't want to blend in with the bands that aren't doing anything. We want to model a band that is and has done amazing things, because obviously that's what worked.
Right. I was thinking about that. One of the things, I was putting together the Power Performance Training Program, and I kept coming back to the concept of, even in this artistic, you know, art meets science with Apple. You know, the iPad is this beautiful tool of technology, but yet it gives you access to the art that you love, the movies you love, the music you love, the ability to create your own music and videos using, you know, the iPad 2 and later. And yet I kept coming back to how much the details matter. And when I was thinking about, you know, how do we evaluate the importance of details, I thought about that very thing. You talked about, you know, let's focus on what the good bands do well. Today, music, yes, the details on the score sheet matter. What time are we in? How many notes do we play in this particular measure? But nowadays, a band that has great videos online, a great social media presence, a great approach to the audience, they've got their arrangement figured out, they know what it costs to travel around the country and locally. It sounds like what you're saying is the details matter more than ever, not just on the sheet of music, but in the way you run your band, because a band today is still a business.
Yep, and that's the thing, and I think that is the number one thing that I think bands miss out, is the fact that, like, literally, I mean, 5% of our time is playing live out. The other 95% of our time is doing all the things to get that one show to be good. Like, you can be the best band in the world, and that's why there are so many bands that are very, very good that we've come across that literally aren't really doing anything and no one really knows about. And it's because I think too many bands think they're like, okay, we're really good as a band live, so we're fine. We're good to go from now on. But you have to. I mean, it is 100% still a business. And if you don't approach it that way and have all the details just organized the way that they should be, I mean, you're not going to stand out. Because before people see you live, you have to sell them to even want to see you live. And that's where we're trying to put all the details into stuff. And for example, we spent, you know, a lot of money and a lot of time on our debut EP. But instead of doing what most people do, which is, hey, let's try to sell as many as we can, ours is free. We give it out to anyone in the world for free, even when we tour, for the simple fact that, hey, get thousands and thousands of people on board to love what we're doing musically so that they want to hear more. Instead of trying to, I mean, you're not going to sell that many CDs when no one knows who you are, but you sure can give a lot away and get their emails and get research for the future, so that when you do release something, you now have thousands of people who may have never listened to you because they didn't buy your CD. They now have it for free.
That's incredible because, you know, during this whole and for people who don't know, myself and Scott and our good buddy Nike Van Wyk, we've done lots of live shows around the country, and we've always talked to one another about how do we convert these individual events into an ongoing business. And you just said something that is so true. Since 2008, when the economy kind of took that weird downturn and nobody knows where it's going, for the first time ever, I started thinking, well, maybe I do need to refinance my home. Maybe I need to make some financial changes. And I always started with research first. I didn't call Bank of America. I didn't call Quicken Loans. I heard their ads on satellite radio. I saw their stuff online. And if they could, you know, the first time I went to their website, the first time I called their 1-800 call center, if the experience was good, I went to the next step. But if the phone was busy, the website looked like a spam page, I didn't go any further. And yep. What you're saying is, again, like the song that I used to open this show, that first four beats, that first measure of Tom Sawyer hooked me on that song.
Yep.
And that's about preparation and practice. And I just find that very, very interesting. When we come back from the break, I want to ask you about your first experience as a musician. When do you remember saying to yourself, you know what, I like music. Some kids are good at baseball. Some kids are good at chemistry. But I like music. I like making music. I like listening to it, writing it, arranging it. And then ask you, how can modern-day brands learn from that creative process to be successful in 2012 and beyond? And we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to The Power of Performance. If your brand were a band, would you leave your audience wanting more?
All right, we are back on The Power of Performance with 13 minutes to go in the show. Scott, I've had a lot of fun watching my son embrace music this year. He plays the trumpet. The trumpet is probably the one instrument that I like more than any other outside kind of your conventional rock and roll arrangement, you know, drums, electric guitar, bass guitar, rhythm guitar. I don't like the saxophone. I don't like the sound of the saxophone. I'm not crazy about keys. I love brass, and I've enjoyed being able to help him, you know, sit up straight. Posture matters in music, and, you know, you got to keep time, and all the things that I can't help him with on the mathematics part of the equation at homework time, I can help him with in his music. I wanted to ask you, when did you know that you wanted to pursue music as kind of a full-time avocation?
Well, when I was younger, when I was 13, I had my dad played drums his whole life, and he played in a lot of bands back in the day, and cover bands, and did the typical just traveling around doing lots of stuff with bands. So he obviously was into music in general. When I was 13, I had a friend of mine, well, my oldest sister dated a friend of, well, now a friend of mine, but it was just her boyfriend at the time. He played some guitar, and he would bring it over and play some different things. And I, at that time, I had already picked up the drums and started just banging away the drums like any kid would when it's, you know, in your house. And I started to kind of catch on to it, and had the rhythm part kind of came easier to me, just because I guess I just have always having hearing music and just being into it. I just kind of grabbed onto that. And I started to kind of get bored with the fact that, you know, as drums, you have to have someone else playing with you, or music
exactly.
playing of some sort, or it's not very fun to do. And it wasn't very fun to have people over and say, hey, you know this song, and then just start jamming away at a drum beat. No one really caught on to that. So as he brought it over to the guitar, I kind of was like, man, you know, I like that instrument. I like the fact that I can sit down by myself with a guitar and play other songs and write my own music and do all that kind of stuff. And especially an acoustic guitar, you don't need to plug it into anything. Obviously, for live shows you do, but you can sit at home and play the acoustic. And just I really, really started grasping that. And then as I was 16 or 17 years old, someone got me the Dave Matthews Band CDs. And when I first listened to them, I was like, whoa, this stuff's weird. Because obviously at the time, it was very different than what was out. But as I listened to it more and more, I was just like absolutely intrigued. And so I started playing some shows out when I was like 16, 17 years old at some of the local bars and restaurants and stuff. And my dad would have to come with me and play the congas and snare because I couldn't get into the bars. And so we just kind of really – and at that point, I kind of just realized, you know what, I like this performance side of it. I like trying to get better at what I'm doing and try to figure out what works and what doesn't. And so I just, you know, travel around for a little. But right out of high school, before I was even out of high school, probably when I was a junior in high school is when I kind of decided, you know, this is what I was going to try to take seriously as my profession. And I've been fortunate enough since that time, back in 2002 or 2003, I've been fortunate enough that that has been my job per se for since then. So I've been really blessed with that.
Well, I've always thought that, you know, I've met a lot of, you know, musicians. You talked about your dad. He plays drums. He plays drums at your church. You've played at your church. Probably the only time I've ever played with a group or live has been at church. I think a lot of people start that way. And, you know, you were talking about how, you know, going along, you wanted to emulate bands that have been successful. You talked about the importance of details and managing the business part of this. Would you say that a lot of musicians, or maybe not a lot of them, but some of the musicians I've met seem almost embarrassed about pursuing money and success? They want it to be about honesty and, you know, forthrightness and here's my story in a song, but I don't care about making money. And I think sometimes those are the bands you never hear of.
Yeah, I think that I think without a doubt it does have to be about the music. Like, you have to obviously, if you look at music as strictly a job, it's never going to be fun or successful, I think, because obviously then you're not really enjoying the music side of it. But at
right.
the same time, I think most bands would be foolish to say that you're obviously you can't play music and travel around and do stuff and enjoy it if you have a 40-hour-a-week job and you can't do music as your only thing.
Right.
So I think you'd be foolish to say as a musician, like, I mean, I could straight up say that I'm not trying to be famous. Like, that's not my goal at all. But at the same time, I'm not going to say that I don't want things to be extremely successful, and hopefully that'll be, you know, the money that I need in my life. Like, but I do think that, yeah, too many, I mean, some bands, I think, like to say that to simply not make it seem like it's about the money, and it's not about the money, but obviously they know that if they can be successful and music is good, that it can turn into their life, and that's important.
Well, and it sounds like what you're talking about, again, another musical concept is the concept of harmony. You have to balance the honesty of the music with the marketability of the music. If you have a great song and people want to hear it live or download it or enjoy a free EP single online, you have to balance, hey, here's a great song for you, enjoy, come see us at the Hard Rock or come see us at a live event. And what I was saying earlier seems to be a consistent theme here, and that's the concept of details. You talked about how a band presents itself, the way they set up their equipment and things like that. One of the first things I noticed when I was working with you and Nick, when we were doing the live events all over the country, was how meticulous you were about where things went. You liked your microphone on a certain side of the stage. You liked to have your things within reach and comfortable. And one of the things I always remember is that right away you and Nick noticed little details in my presentation, the keynote and the PowerPoint slides, things that weren't the same font or things that were not centered. And I thought that seemed like a very musical thing to be so focused on the details, because as you know, when you're playing hundreds of notes on a page, one note can ruin everything.
Yep. And I think that's big, the you know, part, like you said, the details is the fact that, like, there's so many times that I've seen a band live or I've mentioned something to someone playing or like, for example, the presentation or something, that I notice something's off and I'm, you know, want to be like, change that. And I get from a lot of people the fact that, like, oh, well, who's paying attention?
right.
And I can, you know, argue that to the day, because the fact that I do understand without a doubt that most people will not notice that. But if we were to come across a big band, for example, the Verticolors are trying to do things in a big way and do that. We're not trying to just play in bars and be background music. We're trying to do things in a big way. The people that will notice the kind of stuff that we are trying to spend details to are the people that we are ultimately trying to reach. We bands like Coldplay and the Dave Matthews Band and all those kind of people, they have every detail down to a T for their live show, for their lights, for their tour, for every little detail. So just because the average small company or small band or person that you play for, just because some of those people won't notice, you really should be going after and really putting together the details for the few people that will notice, because those are the people that actually make the difference.
Exactly. And I remember when we were doing our live events, you know, we would always play and we would do a kind of a combination keynote, you know, motivational speech combined with live music. And there would always be on occasion one or two people that would say, oh, man, I didn't understand the lyrics. I didn't get the volume. And it was sort of like we would kind of get, you know, down on the fact that we had one or two people and lose sight of the fact that 98% of the people thought it was just amazing. I think one of the things that is most critical about music is that musicians always evaluate their performances. And I don't know that businesses always do that. I don't know that a business ends every day and says, hey, what could we have done differently? What could we do better? But it seems like musicians, because they are so focused on the details and how things sound and how things are presented, the lighting, the sound, the arrangement of the instruments and the people on stage, I think they have to keep looking at those things. And I don't know, businesses always do a great job of saying, hey, we were in business today at Best Buy here in New Braunfels from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Who did we leave wanting more? Who's going to come back tomorrow instead of going to, you know, Amazon.com to order that iPad? And who's going to forget about us in 2 days? And it sounds like what you're saying is, if you'll focus on the details, if you'll balance the mission of your business with the details of your business, you can really inspire your audience to keep wanting more.
Yeah, and you have to, and you do have to evaluate stuff like you said, but it doesn't mean like, and obviously you're number one, the thing I say with any business whatsoever is you are not going to please every single person, and you're not going to get every person to love your brand. But, and so when you do get negative things, I mean, it's important. I mean, we will always listen, obviously, to any critic and listen to it and really evaluate that and say, okay, was that something that, like, that we think seriously needs to be changed, or was that something that, you know, that's just maybe we're not going to please them with that portion of it and we need to move on from it. So I think it's good to evaluate what you've done wrong, but especially as a musician and as a business too. I mean, if you go and do a live event and you notice a section of the show that maybe as I'm playing a show, I see, you know, people started to, it seemed like they started to zone out during that time and not really pay attention to what we're doing. Maybe we need to move that song to a spot that it comes after another song so it sounds better, and maybe that part was too boring and we need to make that more upbeat. So there, you have to definitely evaluate things all the time and figure out what you can do better. But yeah, like you said, you can't let the few little negative things change it. All you can do is you know, pay attention to them and say, is that something, you know, we should address ourselves with and concern ourselves with?
I know when we were doing our events, I would say probably after every single one, we would get together, and even very informally, we'd say, wow, man, that was awesome. Or we would say, hey, that was awesome, but let's do this first, or let's do this. And we always were very, very willing to change our approach based upon, you know, the audience or based upon the environment. And I think, you know, maybe more than anything else, music teaches that perfect balance between details and you know, being able to improvise at times. Music, when it's really, really great, is never scripted. It stays within a certain parameter. I mean, if you're doing a singer-songwriter kind of performance, you're not going to just all of a sudden break out into some kind of, you know, funky rap song or something like that. It's all about finding the right balance for your audience. And I just think that's a great way to look at it. Hey, listen, man, I appreciate you sharing what you're doing with the Verticolors. I can't wait to hear more about where you guys are heading out to and kinds of things you're doing. But I wish you the best of luck in everything. And I hope you'll join us again to talk about how music can teach us about our business.
Yep, thanks for having me. And yeah, anyone could check out theverticolors.com, just like it sounds, verticolors.com. You could download the EP on there for free and check it out. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I talked about Tom Sawyer being a song I loved the first time. Is there a song that you absolutely loved the first time you heard it?
Pretty much most songs of the Dave Matthews Band. but there are definitely, songs, and they're definitely one of those bands that there's plenty of their songs when you listen to, you just right away can gravitate to. But I can't even think of one particular one off the top of my head, but there's definitely those songs for sure.
Well, it'll probably not surprise you, but the Dave Matthews Band is about to displace U2 as my second favorite band. And you'll probably hear plenty of their songs on this show. Hey, listen, man, have a great day out in Arizona, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Take care.